there can be, and I'm very proud of him, and this is great. Other people from our board are more from the development sector, other people are more from the civil society. And just to demonstrate the overlap between ICANN and Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation, Alain Baroget, who was active until he couldn't do it for health reasons in ICANN very much and was the head of the NPOC. NPOC is a board member. Who else do we have on the list? Rudy will become, hopefully, soon an ICANN, an, a GKPF board member. And so there is quite an overlap, and I think it's a very, very healthy overlap, because we need to look at the different aspects of internet governance, and we can't any longer separate pure names and numbers from what they're actually doing. Everything which is done here and which is done in ICANN has a direct impact in development on the ground. And, for example, the new GTLD program might be a game changer for ICANN, but it's also a game changer for the world. And I will talk about that a little bit later. So what we decided in GKPF was basically to take on the role and to take on trying to look at what we need to do and how we can support the internet ecosystem through our activities. And we literally took to heart, for example, the questions which Tarek Jamal asked in the ICANN, for example, what can we do to integrate the nation states into internet governance? And we didn't look at it from reshuffling this organization, tweaking this thing, but we asked really our members and a lot of other people, including inside the UN system, what can we do, what shall we do, what's happening? And this brings me now to my PowerPoint presentation, in which basically there are two elements I want to talk about. This is our mini IGFs. This is not academically high ground. This is actually nothing new. But this is actually where the people on the ground in development are with internet governance. No more, no less. There are holes in it. There are so big holes in it that you won't believe it. But on the other hand, it works. So we asked, internet governance is currently not working. Why? And the answer we got back is that the fundamental challenge is a clash of multi-sovereignties in cyberspace and government of the many by the few. So these are just headlines. What does that actually mean? Let's have a closer look. The first one is a clash of the multi-sovereignties in cyberspace. There are literally many sovereignties, but only one cyberspace. So as to demonstrate that nation states are looking at cyberspace from the perspective based on their territory. The private sector looks at it based on innovation, investment, and infrastructure. And I think there is no better, and in the positive sense, better example, for example, like Google. And there, at the same time, is a civil society which basically based its sovereignty in cyberspace on the common good. How many times do we hear about cyberspace and the common good of the internet? Basically, what is needed, and these are just keywords, but they need to be filled in the context of cyberspace and internet governance. Sovereignty needs to be defined and based on new criteria. We need to find a new definition of sovereignty for cyberspace. And this is nothing new, it's just something which comes out. And when you talk to the different groups, you're coming to a new definition of sovereignty is based on the ability of stakeholders to have specific expertise relevant to the internet ecosystem. Meaning, For example, what Google does is a specific expertise. What a human rights organization does is a specific expertise. When they are promoting it or using it in cyberspace, it is relevant. To be inclusive and able to take account the needs and interests of other stakeholders. The way we have to look at other stakeholders is not to be our competition, but actually vital elements for us allow us to implement our interests. So, for example, if a private sector company wants to introduce a new product or service, they should know that they have to work together with the states, with civil sector and so on, in actually to make it a success, because everybody somehow is involved and relevant. Transparent and accountable. I think that is an absolute basis which a lot of people talk about, but as more transparent and accountable. And I wrote in a recent article, transparent and accountable to the point of obsessiveness. But we really should think about that. And then, which I find the most important point, which came out, to have the ability to manage the decision and implementing process in a timely and effective way. We cannot let people exercise a sovereignty when they cannot exercise a sovereignty when they actually cannot implement it, when the decision making, when all these things, these processes basically block themselves. So these are the four points which basically have been came out of how to start thinking about defining cyber sovereignty. There are just some. This slide just came in for another group, but I want to point up to the right hand, left up, serves up. That was maybe at some of the sessions here in our ICANN meeting. Serve was up. Okay. How can we actually bridge the multi-sovereignty gap? What can we actually do to get these sovereignties going? The gap between the different definitions and understandings of the sovereignty in cyberspace can be bridged when all stakeholders recognize and respect each other's sovereignty as equal. There is no bigger, larger, smaller sovereignty. All sovereignties in cyberspace are equal. All stakeholders recognize that their sustainability and development as interdependent. As I said before, you can't do anything without taking into account the other sovereignties. And all stakeholders recognize the need for and actively participation in instrument for change, awareness building, knowledge and processing. I'm coming to that point very soon in much more detail. Because then we have the second problem, the government of many by the few. And we all know what governance in cyberspace should be. I mean, consensus-oriented, accountable, transparent, responsive. It's actually a nice list, but we all know it isn't. It is not fully fulfilling all the criteria of how governance in cyberspace should be. Because the reality today is internet governance resembles a country where less than 1% of the population are in charge of 99% of the population. And I think that is our basic problem here. We can't claim to be true representative in cyberspace and exercise our governance also here in ICANN if we not ensure that the people we are actually govern in one form or another know what's going on. And that doesn't mean that everybody needs to be an internet ICANN expert. There are different levels and appropriate knowledge for different groups. But for example, I think if people would know a little bit more about the basics of how the internet works, the Snowden affair wouldn't have had such an impact. And I think the NSA wouldn't have had the possibility to do things they did do because they could do it because nobody knew about it. It's simple as that. If you don't know, you can do it. And the second thing, 99% of the information technology users are uninformed users and consumers. This is a clash and the reality in cyberspace. And we have to face it. I don't think that that organizations like ICANN can go on with this situation. And I think that other organizations like the EU slowly but steadily realizing that they also have something to do about it. And they're doing, they are at the beginning of doing that. So today's information technology affects everybody, and like any democracy, the legitimacy and sustainability of the internet and its governance is directly proportional to the ability to create general awareness and engagement for the internet technology users. I think this is a kind of statement we have to look for. So, if we take all this together, what does the future of the internet depend on? On the ability to create informed cyber citizens with rights and responsibilities. We not if we talk about rights and sovereignties, there are also responsibilities clearly attached with them. The ability to create ongoing, fair, and transparent dialogue between the multi-sovereignties of cyberspace. And in order to make that dialogue happening, we need a new instrument. And that's where we came up to in coalition with a number of organizations and a strange mixture because, for example, it includes the digital initiatives of the UN, it includes GKPF, it includes NPOC, it includes Somos Telecentros. It is an eclectic mix, but it is, in my opinion, a healthy mix. The instrument which can make that happening is needs to be fully dedicated to all internet ecosystem stakeholders. It can't be something which is just looking at the business sector or only looking at the private sector. It needs to include all internet ecosystem stakeholders. It needs to provide a joint workspace, which is a practical platform and not just something abstract. I think the time for of talking is coming not to an end, but needs to be replaced also by implementation. And serving as a learning platform for all stakeholders to learn, to understand, and how to collaborate with each other. And I think one of the major problems between the stakeholders is that they don't actually understand what the other says or talks. So we need a lot of learning. Some more criteria. There needs to be a space for impartial cross-cutting research, because if you are looking at the research, a lot of the research which is happening at the moment on cyberspace is actually orientated to a specific group or interest, open to all stakeholders and fully transparent, and support existing policy-making processes, but should strictly not engage in policy-making itself. I don't think, and a lot of people we talk to think, we don't need new policy-making body. We just need bodies which help the existing policy-making bodies to implement and to become active. And respect all expressions of sovereignty in cyberspace and not be part and dependent of any. That means, for example, the support mechanisms we are envisaging should not be funded by, should not be dependent on. It should be a mixture between all different groups and not be, for example, the UN's platform or the European Union's platform. It should give a space to all these organizations but not be dependent on or responsible to. And I think that also, which often is forgotten, that the stakeholders should feel a strong sense of ownership. I think when you are going into ICANN and into the ICANN groups, you always have a strong sense of ownership, and we should learn that. We should know that we are at home when we are working at places, and that we actually are guiding and are not guided. Okay, that's why we need what we think the iEngage Institute. The iEngage Institute is simply an instrument to support the internet ecosystem. And in order to create this vital and necessary instrument for internet governance, the iEngage Institute has been created. This is the reason why we did this. And the mission is to help to bridge the gap between the multi-sovereignties in cyberspace. And the vision is to be activity-based platform and all supports all stakeholders in the internet ecosystem in governing processes and institutions. And I think I actually will stop the PowerPoint presentation here because all you get is a thank you and so on slides. But which I would like to go now to the point, what is the Institute actually doing? Or what have you done and what are you going to do? And once again, we unashamedly stole some ideas and some concepts from ICANN. And the point is that we created and we are creating at the moment councils. Councils around specific topics, like, for example, GTLDs for for development, GTLDs for jobs, child online protection, iInform outreach campaign and awareness building for the internet, and some of the events we had is one at the General Assembly in New York. We were involved in one of the events where we basically discussed a lot of these topics. We just recently participated in an event at Windsor Castle where a high visibility body of very eclectic body from all over the world came together to simply discuss current most very important topics and made a lot of input into the presentation you just saw. We are planning for the next year at least three events in the United Kingdom about specific topics. We will bring up groups of experts, of people who are stakeholders, who are having sovereignties in specific fields, like, for example, child online abuse, and not sit there with them, and they are not sitting there just to talk about what should be done, but how things should be implemented. And I take child online abuse as one of the example, and then I'm going over for GTLD for jobs as a second example. What's happening at the moment, for example, with child online abuse is for me an unbelievable scandal. Because at least in the Northern Hemisphere, it is estimated that more than 50% of suicides in teenagers are caused either directly or indirectly by cyberbullying or abuse over the internet. The UN bodies and the ITU come back to their remit and say, look, we legislate. We create the laws to prevent that. And that's where it stops. But what happened to the victims of child online abuse? There needs to be victim support for child online abuse. So we, for example, developed in the Institute over the last year and a half some ideas and some practical points of implementations, what we can do to not only to legislate but also to create a victim support, and you find the materials here. This is why I did that here. The other point is where I would like to come in one of the workshops or panel or council, whatever you want to call it, is about GTLDs and jobs. And I think that is one of the most important topic, and a topic which is very much overlooked. If you're looking at the new GTLDs, there are so many business and job opportunities and development opportunities that are actually, when you look into them in detail, breathtaking. And some think that the damage has already been done by only 16, I think, GTLD applicants from Africa. And how many from Latin America? 24? 27. I mean, that's basically is a scandal in itself. But that, how can you expect an African businessman or somebody applying for a GTLD if they don't have viable business plans to get their cash back and to make the whole thing work? And the fact is that these business plans and that these business concepts exist. There is nothing which has to be invented, and they're actually partially implemented. What it's all about is to go and to tell people about it and how it is done and how you can build up a business plan and how you can use a GTLD for job creation. At the Windsor Castle meeting, there was one of the tribal kings from Ghana, and he is not interested at all in internet governance. But what he is interested in is creating jobs for his people. And suddenly, when you talk about the GTLD program and explain how it can actually be used to create jobs for his people, suddenly internet governance becomes very, very interesting for people who don't even know it existed before. It's just one straightforward example I gave. Tony is sitting over there. Tony is very much interested in, and one of the panels, and I hope Tony will help us to organize this in the year, is about mobile 4D. And there is, an app fab. If you look in the development world about mobile phones and things like that, everything is app. Develop apps. Young people develop apps. I love apps, no problem. What I don't like is when actually apps don't produce anything, they don't put food on the table or have any actual practical development value on the ground. And Tony, for example, has some really, really good ideas, and hopefully we managed to get a group of sovereignty holders together somewhere in this world next year and talk about how can we actually implement some of that ideas we have so that we have a real impact. So, how are these working groups actually governed and so on? Unashamedly, we will basically adopt the same best practices ICON is adopting. So there will be real controls, real reporting, and real implementation. What I hope to get out of this meeting, and then I will stop, is that you understand a little bit about who and what is a iEngage Institute. That you might consider joining us in one or two of these activities and really help us. And you can you have a choice. You can either support the Institute as a activity overall. You can become a thought leader or discussion or issue leader and help us to get the processes going. You can call, you can call it working groups, or you can, as we call it, councils. You can become a member in some of these groups. You don't have to be in everything. And you also, most important, help us to develop the concept further and to make it better. This is everything I said here is a work in progress, and we will learn. And I really, really learn. Hope to learn over the next days and weeks more and more. I learned here. I'm hoping to be able to, with others, to visit the EU and in the next 2 or 3 weeks and learn more there and to go from that. So, are there any questions? I talked enough.
Thank you, Klaus. Rudy speaking for the transcript. Thank you for this enormous volume of information you have given us. I know he is passionate about, and he almost sleeps with the iEngage Institute in his head all the time. I would like to come back to the initial principles and go around the table about the participants' vision on sovereignty. I think that's the key of our proposal. It's the lack of sovereignty for the internet space that we have been touching upon. And I would like to go around the table and see if there are any visions or other visions on the definition of sovereignty for the internet space. So for those who are interested in engaging in the discussion, the floor is open, and I would like to start with that topic first. Please state your name when you speak.
Amitabh Singhal, I'm from India. I work with the civil society. I'm engaged with some NGOs in India, which are actually involved with ICT intervention for the grassroots communities. Should I slow down? Okay. My name is Amitabh Singhal. I'm from India. I'm engaged with some NGOs there who are involved with ICT intervention with the grassroots communities. A couple of things on my mind. First of all, some very basic question, which is about iEngage Institute. Is it a physical space that you have already created? Is it or is it a virtual mail list as of now? What is the structure which is currently existing?
Straightforward answer. We have created a physical space in The Hague in the Netherlands with IICD. We are just creating a space in Washington, but these are supporting offices. Their role is not to make any kind of policies. They're just there to support the groups to function. I'm very happy to hear the word India, because part of our initiative, is, if you might know, is the E-Kutia agricultural initiative in India we are already working with. Okay. And I really would like to take that opportunity to later talk to you to see if we might be able to do some things in that direction together, because I think there are some overlaps.
Okay, so may I just move on? Thank you for the clarification, and I think that was one thing on my mind. Going further, that we could probably talk about an engagement for iEngage in that part of the world. It's not probably just about India, but maybe in my mind I was thinking that it could be about that part of the world which is not yet probably properly represented, especially in the ICANN situation as we see it. So there are two, three things on my mind. One is, of course, a better engagement for this institute in the, on the Asian side, because when you're talking about multi-stakeholder inclusion, I think what we should be talking about is not just multi-stakeholders being part of the ICANN process. I think it should be about inclusion, because as we see it, and why I'm saying this word inclusion is more important from the development point of view. A large section of internet users globally, about 2.5 billion of them, are not really represented properly in this entire working, okay, so to say. That is one part. The other part could be also about representation from people who actually are deprived of connectivity, deprived of access. Okay, so when we are talking about internet ecosystem, we should not forget that there's a large mass of community which is not yet there. How do we engage with them and make them understand how they should be part of it. And I think there's some work being done by certain civil society organizations. There's a lot of hard work on the ground, but they still struggle to go to that next 3 billion or 4 billion people. And I guess when you're talking about building policies and building a sovereignty around the cyberspace, this is a big part of mass that needs to be part of that sovereign activity. And going from there, I think when it comes to sovereignty, it's legacy, you know, how internet developed, right? So I don't know whether we can really define or redefine sovereignty on the cyberspace. It's a matter of fact that, yes, most of the internet traffic, most of the data the storage happens to be in the US as a matter of legacy, and which is where the sovereignty has actually emerged. And it remains with the US. And that's always been the big question as to why it should remain with the US. So that's a technical legacy that we have. We can't really do away with it, right? So I don't know whether it is really going to fetch us any suitable outcome in terms of challenging the sovereignty of the cyberspace. It is as it remains. If you look at the businesses, they really don't care, right? Where there's money, they will go there, and they'll make their presence felt, right? But from a governance point of view, how do we democratize the sovereign aspect of cyberspace? I really, I'm struggling to think why it'll happen. I think the question here is not about sovereignty, but it is probably about jurisdiction now. Because from a practical standpoint, what is happening is that when nations struggle to manage cyberspace or activities in cyberspace by different players, they struggle with their physical, legal jurisdiction, but they do not know how to get cooperation from other nation states in terms of legal jurisdiction. So when we talk about sovereignty, it is about legal jurisdiction. So that's one aspect that we probably need to look at as well. And that's an important piece, because unless we have some kind of international understanding or a harmonization of this understanding, going forward, we will probably not be able to address this sovereign issue in cyberspace. So these are some of the initial thoughts I had, and I'll be happy to engage and see how we can get some players from the Asian side to come up, and that's where the most number of internet users are as well. So I think we need to go there physically and virtually probably. And the other thing is, last point, I have to take a flight, so I'll probably in another 5 minutes move off. So if there's anything that you want to suggest or say, I'll be happy to hear that as well.
Thank you very much for these very interesting comments. And it shows that I engage work. You are engaging yourself in this discussion. I've seen already some other hands up. But by the way, I know this person. He is in the ISO community.
This one works.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, okay, all right. Okay, so my name is Erik Forsberg. I'm from the European Commission of the European Union, so I'm one of the governments here, and been to the GAC during the negotiations. But since we have worked a little bit together before, since we have also similar thoughts on how to reach out to improve internet governance over the world with a project that we called JIPO. We work together with not only ourselves, we also have also Brazil, we have Japan, we have the African Union on our side to actually reach out and to make internet a little bit more accessible to not only governments in around the world, but also I would say around also for other stakeholders, obviously smaller communities in the world, different NGOs that needs to know more about it. So we have been working on that, and it complements quite a lot with what this institute is doing. So that's why we have a connection also with you here on this matter. I just wanted to say that I think one of the problems for governments for the time being is that I would be very blunt to you. It is the complete U.S. dominance over everything that happens on the internet, and it cannot be that we have a multi-stakeholder way of dealing with things, where of course, let's face it, in all the different matters, in all these three that you talk about, nation state, private sector, and civil society, at least in the two first, we're completely dominated by the United States. And the connection between the private sector and the nation state in terms of the United States, that connection is very strong, which makes that the force of the United States in this concept becomes completely overwhelming. And that's, I think, why many others have been starting to work on alternatives. We don't have, in GAC, in the Governmental Advisory Committee, we didn't have India with us this time. I mean, this is a major problem. We don't have South Africa anymore either. And some countries are just leaving out. The Chinese sent a very nice and very nice girl, but she had even difficulties to get through her positions. And she was actually helped by Belgium, which is a funny thing. But anyway, that's a parenthesis. It should not possibly be for the record, but this is the way it looks like in GAC today. This is what and GAC is just one example. Now, if we don't have a situation where actually the India and other countries, Brazil, I can tell you anymore, they are starting to look on other solutions. The other solution is, of course, ITU. And that is not our way forward in the European Union. Our way for the European Union is to make the multi-stakeholder approach functions for everyone, whether it's nation states, private sectors, or civil society. But if I take the example, this internet governance model that we have in multi-stakeholder, that has to function for the government of Guinea-Bissau. It has the private sector that is happening and the initiatives that are in, let's say, in Sri Lanka, that has to be taken into account. And also the civil society, then let's take India, has to have its voice in this. Otherwise, we are lost. Otherwise, member states in around the world, or member state countries, and sovereign countries, are starting to legislate, and they are starting to look at other alternatives. And we are in a very crucial point. It's a breaking point right now on this. The European Union is really trying hard, very, very hard, to reach out, to make this a process which is open to everyone, where everybody can participate. It's an inclusive process we want. And that is very, very important for us. We are underlining that. But I can tell you that we are fighting every day to get our voice heard against this complex mass that we have in front of us. I'm not anti-American, nefelit not. United States of America is the home of the freedom and everything that you would like to say, but we cannot have it like this. It cannot continue like this. It's something that we all share around. And I think also when you talk with the civil society, the American civil society, they're very much on our side. I can tell you, I have been here fighting for stupidity, but it's a very sensitive issue. It has to do with the application for wine and vin. I have been talking for Napa Valley, I have been supporting Napa Valley in this. You know, they also have an asset which they would like to protect on the internet, that is not cyber squatting. So I just say, let's try to work together. I think this initiative is very good. It is one of many initiatives. I think also we need to have a way of actually connecting the different initiatives over the world to see to it that there is a coherent way of working on these issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lars. Very interesting point. We have a remote participant that has some questions. The name seems to be Son. The question, and there are several questions. The first one is, the iEngage institution like a movement towards IG, as it seemed to be a platform similar to that of IG forums? Is this not possibly creating organizations with similar roles?
Sorry, I didn't. I think we need to not only a multi-stakeholder approach, but also a multi-solutions approach. I think, for example, the iEngage is capable to help to address very specific problems and implementation problems, but it will not be able to do everything at the same time. And I think there will be a process where iEngage will develop a certain expertise and sovereignty on specific topics, whilst in other areas, other organisms will pop up and take over a leading role. I think what we need is not a big coordinating organization. I think what we need is a different spirit of working together. And what's for me important is that we start becoming outcome-orientated and implementation-orientated and not talk. And for example, and I'm sorry that I'm coming back to it, I really would like to copy some of the ICANN practices in the working group, because a working group, even if they meet for 2 years or 3 years, at the end there is a product. And in the end, there is an implementation. And hopefully we might get it a little bit down timeline-wise. But I think on these issues, which I just mentioned, like GDLTs or jobs or child online abuse, we should concentrate on the outcomes and not on the discussion. I think it's clear what the problem is. It's clear what possible solutions are. It's a question now how to get it actually done. It's the same with mobile for teens, a lot of other things. The only danger, and the biggest danger, I think, for iEngage Institute would be if it itself becomes a policy-making body. That's not its role. And the moment it does that, it's basically in hell's kitchen. Thank you for the question, and thank you all for your nice remote participation.
Thank you, Klaus. I see other hands popping up. I will go first from Bob, then you, and then Noah. And sorry, Sam, also in the queue.
Hi, I'm Bob Bruin from the United States. I have a question on sovereignty. You introduced the term for a specific purpose, but I don't see any depth of the definition. For example, I have expertise, I have interests, am I a sovereign body? Or do I have to be a group that's established in some way in the real world? I mean, what's the scope of the definition? Or is that too?
To be absolutely honest, I'm not quite getting your question. Can you try to...
Your definition of sovereignty.
Yes.
You had mentioned bodies that exist as having sovereignty different than the geographical-based sovereignty of a nation-state.
Yes.
But in cyberspace, as an individual, I can do the same thing as a group of any kind. And the nation state is just a group. You know, so what is the scope of sovereignty? Can I be a sovereign body within the definition you have?
This is a slight, and I would like to point out again, this is not a comprehensive answer. This is the result of a consultation process. And the result of the consultation process were these three answers. That can be a body or an organization or a government. If you have a specific expertise, if you're inclusive, needs, interested abilities, if you are transparent, accountable, and have the ability for decision-making and implementation, that's the basis of your sovereignty.
Okay, so as an individual, I can be a sovereign. I can have sovereignty.
Yes, of course.
Okay, that was it.
I hope so.
Thank you, Bob, for your question. Adrian?
Yes, Adrian Quesada from Costa Rica. I have a quick question. I was searching for the iEngage Institute online, and I couldn't find a web page or anything. Is there any project to...
Very good question. When you pick up one of the brochures, you will see that at the back you will find the URL. It's quite easy. It's www.i-engage.me. So you have to engage yourself.
It's not a .org, as everybody thinks and automatically types in. More questions?
So next question, Noha.
This is Noah from Egypt. I would like to know, how do you plan to increase the visibility of iEngage and to outreach different stakeholders?
Straightforward answers. Klaus, for the record. Straightforward answers. We trying to promote as much as we can in that alliance of different groups. There will be new people joining us, more things happening, but it also depends on you. As I said at the end, you have a choice. You can become a member, you can raise a topic, you can actually start an iEngage Institute for the Middle East or whatever you want to do. It's up to you how you want to use that instrument and platform. I think as more we are able to actually produce results, we should grow on our merits and not on our promotional materials.
Thank you, Klaus. Sam, sorry, yes?
Sorry. Noah? No, I just have one comment. It's good. I don't believe in the power of one, but I think more effort should be exerted, because some stakeholders don't know that they are part of the process. So they need to be informed that they are part of the process, and there is tools that they can use. So it starts again from the part of the sovereignty, because stakeholders are not involved. There is still a kind of tug of war between governments and different stakeholders, and governments are still reluctant to let the other stakeholders in the process. So they need to be informed that they are part. They need to be informed that there are tools for them to be engaged in the process.
If I may respond quickly to that question, and I think that Sam will give you much more details, I would say I refer to the title of the organization, of the structure we are putting in, iEngage Me. You're engaging yourself already to try to bring it up in your environment, which means you're going and you're enabled to pull on stakeholders that you think are important. And that's what is important. That is the difference between all the other initiatives where they're using the higher heads and the high towers to be involved, while we are looking for everybody to be allowed to bring to the table the topics and solutions for the questions we have. Sam, you have the floor.
Okay, and I'd like to thank you for the lead into what I wanted to say. Sam Lanfranco, Canada, and some other places. Two terms were used before, inclusion and sovereignty. Sovereignty exists within a domain. And the point that was brought up earlier is those domains can be very small. And for inclusion, I work, and I've been working for a long time with groups in ICT for development from the bottom up, in which we basically start from, say, A.K. Sen's notion of a theory of justice, which says that if you want sovereignty to work in a democratic way, you have to have knowledgeable discourse on the part of those who are within that sovereignty, the individuals within that sovereignty, the communities within that sovereignty, the groups within that sovereignty. And so where I'm starting from and the people that I'm working with are all concerned with saying, okay, the internet is out there. The stakeholders are out there. They may be a farmer in Egypt worried about water. They may be a student in Bangladesh. How do they come to understand what all of this means for them? And what sovereignty are they concerned with? They're not concerned with whether .kids or .kosher is going to be approved or not approved by ICANN. They're concerned about what's happening on their cell phone, or whether they have access to a cell phone, what's happening to the prices of their inputs and their outputs, what are the opportunities for their children. So this engaging and empowering the stakeholders initially in their own context, ICANN is one way of doing it, saying let's reach out to them. No, let's start where they are and let them begin to say, this is what I'm worried about. So this is what I don't understand, and they may not even understand what they don't understand to begin with, so you need a kind of conscientization process that starts there, and it may start with a stick on the ground or a piece of paper nailed to a tree. That's okay. That's the place it starts. And this, so the inclusion, the notion of sovereignty, the notions of engagement, there is a bottom-up way of doing this. It's not easy, but there is a way of doing it.
Thank you, Sam. Another question? State your name when you speak. Thank you.
I'm Natalie from Jamaica, and I want to ask the question, how is iEngage different from Engagement Icon? And what would be what would you be doing differently from them?
Very good question. Klaus?
Sorry, iEngage, and what's the other organization?
Engagement Icon. Icon.
ICANN.
Yes.
To ICANN Engage. I think ICANN, look, yeah. ICANN has very, very specific role and function, and ICANN is extremely good in doing the functions of internet governance, development, stability of the DNS and everything. But there are, what I said at the beginning, there are some topics where everything what ICANN does is influencing other areas in development. For example, the new GTLD program is having such an impact in the development world. But it is not strictly in the remit of ICANN to deal with that. So other people basically have to take over this role and fill this space. And the iEngage Institute is just one of many other initiatives and organizations who are trying to do that.
Yes, go ahead.
This is Noah. She was talking about engagementicon.org, because this is what she was talking about. There is now two kind of platforms or two different websites,
right,
with the engagement part.
And it speak about policy development and economical and.
Yes, I think we can have a clarification from David Olive from ICANN to express the clear view of and engaging in ICANN.
They're complementary, but engagement at ICANN.org is to engage people in our ICANN processes, in the policy development process, in other activities relating to the domain name system. That is our specific focus, as if you were an organization of the World Bank, you'd want to have them come into the World Bank type of thing. But the point is that this institute is complementary. While we have a rather specific focus for the management of the domain name system, this institute and others are looking at what are the other implications for the wider use of the internet for social and economic development, for education, for e-government, and they're looking at these things to also have the engagement of people, how an end user or a user has to worry about things. And so this is, I think, a very good complement to what other efforts are being done by ICANN, the Internet Society, and other internet organizations to promote the better awareness and education of internet users, as well as to have them be aware and be involved at every level or whatever level they need to be involved with. So that's the kind of basic distinction, if you will.
Thank you very much for the clarification, David. So I have one remote participant that brings up another question, a very interesting one. It's CERN again, and he is referring to the Diplo Foundation, that we probably all know, and he wants to know if there is a partnership with Diplo, maybe that working with Diplo could be a second approach. So Klaus, what is your statement?
First of all, I would love to, and I've got one of the highest respect, professional respect for the Diplo Foundation. They have a specific expertise which would work very well inside the iEngage. I tried to engage on iEngage with Diplo during the visits this year at Geneva. It didn't work quite well, but I really hope that we can build a bridge as soon as possible. And as I said, that's a perfect example. Diplo has a certain sovereignty in that internet governance, and it's great. They're great. come on, everybody who knows what Diplodat does and did knows they have, for example, the ability to explain things to people in a way that actually the non-experts understand what's going on. And sometimes, for example, in ICANN meetings, you're sitting when somebody speaks gogledygook, you're just thinking, where's Diplo? But that's the answer. I mean, we would love to, seriously. And I hope that we get that going.
Thank you, Klaus. I think that that will help CERN to understand where we are and what the engagement could be. I see Sam also putting his hand up. Sam, you have the floor.
Natalie, this is to reply directly to your question and give an example. I've been contacted today by a group that represents indigenous societies around the world that are interested in what the internet means for them. Okay, and they will be very interested in this because they're working at the same thing. But I can give you a concrete example. What happens if I apply to ICANN for the global domain name .maroons? Okay, and the maroons in Jamaica don't even know about it. And I get .maroons. And then I do something with it. Okay, well, if the maroons in Jamaica have gone through a kind of grassroots introduction to whatever the internet means to them, and then this comes up, they're alert, they're ready, they're saying, wait a minute, we've got a stake in this. So it's this education and conscientization at a very, very grassroots level and different notions, layered notions of sovereignty that we're talking about here, not how do the maroons influence the ITU or the Internet Engineering Task Force. So this is coming at it from a complementary but a very different level than ICANN that says, we've got our space in the internet ecosystem and we need people to know about that and we need to preserve our remit and all that. So they're very complementary and this is a very large space that we're dealing with.
I just also would like, Klaus, for the record, I just would like to add one more comment. Because it seems to be about the interrelationship between ICANN and iEngage. There is no interrelationship between ICANN and iEngage, but the role of the iEngage Institute is there to be chosen by organizations like ICANN or the ITU or whoever, if they see fit and if they see and evaluate it, to engage with that platform to help with certain things. As I said, ICANN cannot deal with GTLD for jobs, but it can use the iEngage Institute to help other and participate in that discussion and to bring in its specific expertise. The iEngage Institute is there to serve, not to govern. And that's very important. That comes back to the point of not being doing any kind of policy making in any level.
Thank you, Klaus. I see Tony, you have the floor.
Yes, my name is Tony Harris, and I'm here as part of GKPF on the one hand, and I work here in South America with the Argentina Internet Association and also the Latin American Federation of the Internet and Electronic Commerce. I'm also an applicant to the GTLD program for .lat. And I'm sorry I had to step out of the room for a few minutes. I had to take a call, so I may be off track with exactly what you're discussing. But generally speaking on Klaus's, what Klaus has presented, it ties pretty much into something which I've been discussing with him for some time, which is the coming explosion of the internet on mobiles. I mean, you just take a trip on a subway here in Argentina, and it's amazing. You've got in one coach, you've got 300 people and 180 are texting. So basically, to my mind, there's no doubt where access is going. It's going to the handheld device. And on the one hand, as Klaus mentioned, there is a question of internet development and social development, which could extremely be leveraged through mobile phones. Just as an example, all the mobile phone manufacturers and service companies have clubs of developers. I've sat in this hotel in one of the presentations from BlackBerry a couple of years ago. They had 600 young programmers sitting in the room. They were telling them about new development tools, and all these people were working on apps. And you have this in every country, multiplied by how many manufacturers you have for cell phones, the big ones, and by the carriers. But these people are working on, they want to have a hit, they want to have an app that will make them a lot of money. But where is this going, where is this coordinated towards social development? I think nowhere. So that's, on the one hand, there is that. On the other hand, I think the primary tool for outreach for the iEngage Institute would obviously be the cell phone, because that's the way you can get this message of bringing in so many unheard voices. You can get to them quickly on cell phones more than on a website or a very expensive marketing and media program. Have an app on every cell phone which says iEngage or whatever it is, so people have somewhere to go if they want some information, and it may even prompt them to seek information. That's just my two cents at the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony. And indeed, when you go to Africa, the mobiles are the tool of communication, because most of the time landlines don't exist, so they need to use the mobile communications to get in touch with each other. And there are several projects that are running over there. For instance, I know in the agriculture world that they're using a specific application to allow farmers to present their products and know the prices of the products, and they are doing a real big business with that just by using the mobile. I've seen Martin also putting hand up, and I think that Martin, go ahead, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you, Martin Botteman. It's clear a lot is changing, and we need to have good input on those changes that are at hand. And it's also clear there's many initiatives, and I think what came very well out of the discussion, for instance, yesterday morning about OneNet and things like that, that the most important thing in those initiatives is that we realize that this is a world with many interests, and that there needs to be place for that. That we also realize there will not be one solution, and there will not be one internet in terms of very tight definition. There will be an internet that is supporting people around the world, we hope. And in that, I am happy to see this initiative as well. And really to be as effective as possible, I think there's two things. One is continue to keep track of the landscape and see what's been done by others and done well, and liaise with them in whatever way. But the other thing is, for those topics you feel that they are yours to pick up, I see cyber sovereignty is on your top. I know the gentleman next to me is talking about that too and knows a little bit about it. And that's good, but then make per subject very clear what you're doing for who. What I've been missing in other initiatives is like, who is doing this, for whom, and what is exactly the aim. So keep that sharp, and I can see many important subjects that you can importantly contribute to. I like the papers you've been writing, because what you've done there is you pick topics that are on the mind of every people, and rather than spending a lot of time on who is going to talk about this and what needs to happen to make progress about this, you're focusing on bringing a little bit of content, a little bit of what it's really about in the discussion, and I think that's very useful.
Thank you, Martin. And indeed, it is our goal to try to be an added value to what is going on, not being the idea, but helping to structure the whole thing that's going on by little pieces also. And when you said you had a person next to you that has some knowledge, I would say it's an expert. So, Adrian, the floor is yours.
Yeah, Adrian Quesada from Costa Rica once again. I'm very interested in this initiative, and I would like to know what's the procedure if, for example, I were to want to open a chapter of the Engage. Oh, there's a whole form in there. And do you provide institutional support or educational support? Because I would really be interested in that. Thank you.
A very good question. And you saw I have already an answer to your question. We have been really setting up things to allow you to participate. We are not just asking Engage yourself. We are trying to deliver you. You can find also in the documentation that we are providing. And I would say, if you're really interested, look into the topics that we have put on the table. The so-named councils we want to start up. And if you're interested in one of them, please join and start it. It's not us alone. It's all of us. That's the net. It's not just a few around the table. We need all the people, even the not connected, have to engage to help us to understand why they are not connected. And for many regions, that's still the biggest issue to solve. So we will provide you the membership, the fellow registration forms that you can fill in so that you can become a member of this structure. I'm looking around the table. Are there any other comments? Klaus, you want
just
to add?
Very quickly to answer, it's a repeat of before. If you're an institution or something like that, you can become a sustaining member supporting the iEngage directly. If you're an individual, you have a choice. You can say, I'm joining a specific topic and I want to be in that council working group, or what I'm hoping for, I want to start my own. Yeah, and we're providing as much institutional support as possible. That varies from topic to topic. For example, in certain topics, there is funding from the outside available readily. In other topics, you're running around the world 10 times and you don't get a penny. So that's it's not why, because it's, yeah. So we work it out case to case. I really would encourage everybody, the application form is also on the internet. You fill out either the paper form or you fill out the form online, but also there is a space for you to comment and to say, this is what I would like to see happening.
Just practical. Time and travel cost money. Rooms cost money. If I would start a topic, what support would I get from the organization in that? And how do you make sure you have enough money to keep your activities going?
The point, a very straightforward answer. There is still a little bit of money around in our organizations to do initial support. But for example, it really depends on the topic, and it's a repeat of what I just said. For example, if you are looking at GTLD for Ds, there are organizations who are working at the moment at that topic, and they're looking for others to help them to implement or to develop programs, so the money is readily available. If you're looking, for example, at child online protection and victim support, you are talking about a topic where, quite simply, to set up victim support networks is so expensive and only can be done on a national basis that you have to say, without engaging a national government, you won't raise any money. It really depends on where you're at. And so one of the first institutional support would be to sit together and look, where's the money? And I think that is also one of the points of the iEngage Institute. We will not go around and operate anything without a clear business plan. And that's part also of the transparency. because I think it's important that people know where the money comes from, how it's spent, and what impact it has. Because if, let's say, we end up with one big institutional sponsor, then it will influence the discussion. I rather come down with 10, 20, 30 small sponsors which are specific on one topic than, say, for example, ICAC, which doesn't exist, sponsors the whole thing.
Thank you, Klaus. We have 4 minutes left, so I don't know if there are any other questions. I have no questions from the remote. I would then thank you for your participation, also for the remote participation, and we are looking forward to meet you in the iEngage.me Institute as soon as possible. We will try to provide you some extra tools in the coming weeks, and we are even thinking about trying to set up as soon as possible some webinars that will allow you to again engage without having to travel, without having to invest money, and maybe the next step will be the startup of one of the councils in which we will then provide a more clear structure for organizational aspects such as travel and locations where we could have these meetings. So thanks again for being here with us, and we are looking forward to meet you again in the iEngage. Thank you. May I ask to stop recording now? Thank you.